fascinating facts, candid conversations, and some levity to lighten your day. This is the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
A marvelous and magnificent Monday to you. So glad you're with me on the Cale Clark Show. We're going to have a great time today. 888-914-9149. Why? Because I'm in the business of infotainment. Hopefully entertain and inspire as well as enlighten you. We'll give it our best shot anyways. 888-914-9149. Faith, facts, and fun. That's the tagline for the Cale Clark Show. And we hope to have a little bit of all three today. You can also email the show. Cale, C-A-L-E, at relevantradio.com, and you can find me on Twitter at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E. And I'll tell you what, this is going to be intriguing. You probably heard about Marie Kondo, right? If you haven't, I'll fill you in, but if you do know who she is, you know that she wants you to, quote-unquote, spark joy by tossing out things, getting rid of things that are no longer useful. Well, there are a lot of people inside and outside of the church who want to toss out some teachings they feel just aren't that important or superfluous or just downright harmful. But we got to keep them. We'll also talk about the Elam ending. That was a great ending that took place yesterday. If you don't know what I mean, I will explain as well. Lots of good stuff. But I want to throw out a couple of questions for you because believe it or not, Lent starts in 2 days. I just can't believe that tomorrow is Mardi Gras, Fat Tuesday, if you will. And we got Lent beginning this week on Wednesday. Got a question for you. Okay, Marie Kondo is into decluttering. What are some ways that people can declutter their spiritual life this Lent? 888-914-9149. What are some ways that people can declutter their spiritual life this Lent? Maybe you can enlighten our listeners. 888-914-9149. And when it comes to getting rid of stuff, what teachings of the faith do you think that a lot of people in the culture want to get rid of, and why? Why do you think it's important to them? Why do they want to change? Why do people always want to change the church? It's not enough to simply leave the church and go to the church down the road or the congregation down the road that does it the way you want. They want to change the Catholic Church. What teachings of the faith do you think people want to get rid of, and why? And what are some ways that people can declutter their spiritual life this Lent? So I've hit you with a couple things there. You can call in 888-914-9149. We've just been on a roll in the new year, and if you missed any of what happened last week, we've got you covered. Producer Jim Shaper is going to spin for you right now, real quick, the week that was on the Cale Clark Show. Check it out. Kansas City Chiefs chaplain Father Richard Rocha on the show a few days ago before the Super Bowl, and he talked about how deep into his faith Harrison Butker is, and I just had a feeling it was going to come down to him making a kick, and that's exactly what happened. And here's what he said as he was interviewed during media scrum time, if you will, during Super Bowl week about his faith. Check this out. He was interviewed by Sports Spectrum here.
All right. What do you think a prayer might be that you might be thanking God for as you think about what this season has been like for you?
You know, Jesus, I trust in you is a great one. Just trusting his will over our own will, because our own will would be worldly success, right? But there's been a lot of great saints that didn't have worldly success, a lot of great people that didn't. So we got to trust in his will.
Some people like the traditional sweethearts. And Brock's, actually, they have 60% of the conversation heart market, in case you're wondering. So, I don't know. What do you think? My question for you is, what do you think would be some good Catholic messages for these conversation hearts? Let's go to Eddie in Fort Myers, Florida. Hi, Eddie.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for taking the call. What came to mind instantly was choose life.
Love it. Love it.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. Yeah, pro-life candy hearts would be amazing. That would be great. How do you make your work holy? How do you sanctify? Were we made for work, or is this some sort of a punishment? Let's go to Bill in Lockhart, Texas. Hi, Bill.
Good to talk to you today. My work comes pre-sanctified.
Oh, yeah?
All I have to do is actually be available to people 24/7 and remember that those people are first and foremost. Now, I'm a funeral director. Being available to people, and I am, you know, 4 or 5 days a week, I'm available 24/7, far as I'm concerned. Doing the work and putting my clients first, because I know that it's a fundamental need, I mean, what I'm doing is one of the seven corporal works of mercy. So wow. It's a ministry, and I need to be available to people at all times.
Pope Benedict always reminds us that it's corporate reunion that we're searching for in the ecumenical movement. It's not agreeing to disagree. It's not sitting around the campfire and singing kumbaya. We actually have to be together, united in one visible body. And that's the unity that Jesus prayed for in his high priestly prayer in John chapter 17, that they might be one. Why? So that the world would know that you sent me. That's what Jesus prayed.
Jesus left all the people and he covered the man's eyes and said, "Can you see?" And he said, "No, I can only see people walking around like trees." And then the second time Jesus covered his eyes, he said, "Can you see now?" And he said, "Yes, Lord, I can see."
So what does this really mean, though?
So Jesus couldn't do it the first time because of his lack of faith.
Now, in terms of what Michaela was saying, did the guy lack faith the first time? That's an intriguing interpretation, and there are some scholars and some saints throughout history who have kind of said this. This is kind of a, I guess you could say, an allegorical or spiritual interpretation of what happened. Saint Bede said Jesus heals the blind man in order to announce the mystery of redemption, because as God incarnate, Jesus can heal a person through the sacrament of his human nature. Here signified by his hands and spittle, this grace cures our spiritual blindness gradually. And as with the blind man, progress is measured in proportion to our faith. So maybe Michaela was onto something there.
Well, there's no question Michaela is a far greater theologian than I could ever aspire to be. So my thanks to Michaela for joining me to talk about that last week. And my thanks to producer Jim Shaper for putting together the week that was. Great job, my man. And I do hope that we'll have just as exciting a week this week. Well, obviously, as I mentioned off the top, we got a couple of listener questions for you. Number one, what teachings of the faith do you think people want to get rid of or toss? And why is that? And number two, you can pick either one. What are some ways that people can declutter their spiritual life this Lent? 888-914-9149, studio line to call on the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. And why am I talking about decluttering? Well, you probably heard about Marie Kondo and her show, which is uber popular on Netflix, called Tidying Up with Marie Kondo. Now, if you haven't heard of this, we do have a little clip for you. Spin it, Jim.
We have too much stuff. It's official.
It's so hard to let it go.
I don't want to just, you know, dump it. I want to be thoughtful about it.
Choose items that spark joy for you.
Spark joy. It's not as easy as I thought it was going to be.
We're on board. We want to change. I just want it to be strong enough to change me.
All right. So Marie Kondo wants to spark joy, and I want to as well in your life on the Cale Clark Show. Well, Marie Kondo is a Japanese personality, and she's become super popular in North America because of this show, Tidying Up with Marie Kondo. She's also written a couple of best-selling books, an online course. She's got a massive social media following, millions of people. And what this is all about is her method of decluttering, and it's called the KonMari method, which obviously is a play on her name, Marie Kondo. And it's about just basically getting rid of stuff. And this is, she's sort of the anti-hoarder. You know, we've all kind of seen shows about hoarding, and it's just like watching a train wreck. Well, she doesn't want you to get to that point. And so she says, get rid of anything. Here's how you deal with clutter. Get rid of anything that doesn't spark joy. And if it doesn't, toss it. Even if you, the old sweater that you used to wear, okay, I love this thing, but if I'm not really wearing it, I should probably move it on to someone else. Things like books, even, should be kept only to a strict minimum. If you have sentimental items, only hang on to it if it provokes this joy, a super continual emotional reaction. Everything else has to go. And my wife was just super into watching Marie Kondo on Netflix for a while, and I'm sure that many of you were out there as well. Now, just to let you know, there's a lot of schadenfreude out there at the moment because she's kind of changed her tune a little bit. I don't know if you guys know this, but Lots of articles came out in the last few days about her saying that she has kind of abandoned her own method, at least temporarily, because she now has three small children and she's just kind of, and this is an actual quote from her, she's, quote, kind of given up, end of quote, tidying. And she wrote a book called The Life-Changing Magic of Tidying Up. And at first she tried to keep up to her normal standards, but she's 38. She's got three small kids. And she realized, I just can't keep up with these kids. And maybe you guys can relate. I mean, I have one kid, and I think Michaela probably has enough activity and leaves enough stuff lying around for three kids. But a lot of you guys have a lot more than three kids, and you probably know what she's going through. And she said this, and she was interviewed by the Washington Post, and she said, Marie Kondo, quote, up until now, I was a professional tidier, so I did my best to keep my home tidy at all times. But I've kind of given up on that in a good way for me. Now I realize what is important to me is enjoying spending time with my children at home. And she said, my home is messy, but the way I am spending my time right now is the right way for me at this stage of my life. So people are just loving the fact that her home is now messy. Somebody on Twitter said, quote, Marie Kondo has a messy home and I'm 1,000% here for it. Someone else said, y'all don't know how much I needed this today. The mess kids make is no joke. The mess in my house now feels validated. LOL. Okay, so the standard may change a little bit over time. And oddly enough, maybe not so oddly, Marie Kondo's got a new book out talking about this new methodology that she's got. It's called Karashi. This is a Japanese concept called Karashi, which is really meaning sort of a way of life or the ideal way of spending your time. So her new book is called Marie Kondo's Karashi at Home, How to Organize Your Space and Achieve Your Ideal Life. So now, instead of decluttering her home so much, she's really focusing on decluttering her calendar, which is really not a bad thing to look at either. I kind of like that. So decluttering your calendar so you can spend your time on the things that matter. And so she says this. She says, quote, the true purpose of tidying is not to cut down on your possessions or declutter your space. The ultimate goal is to spark joy every day and lead a joyful life. So what she's saying right now is that, hey, I've got three kids, and the best way for me to spend my time right now is not necessarily being hyper-vigilant about decluttering, but just simply enjoying my time with my children. So, and she'll probably go back to the KonMari method in a little while when the kids get a little bit older. So I think that's true. I think that's true. It kind of depends on the season of life that you are in. But again, when it comes to the faith, a lot of people seem to want to declutter the Catholic faith, as it were. They want to get rid of doctrines, if you will, that they think are unhelpful, that they make the faith unnecessarily complicated. Kind of the way Marie Kondo might attack a messy home, at least back in her heyday. So I read a little piece on this by this writer named Samuel James, who talks about people who want to toss out beliefs when they don't, quote unquote, spark joy in their lives. And so it's interesting that he says that a lot of Christians, particularly in the West, they look at theology and church teaching the way that Marie Kondo thinks about clutter. And they think, you know, we could just get rid of what's not useful, quote unquote, or what may be stopping people from joining the church, quote unquote. And so he says, really, this is not a helpful way to think. It's not a helpful way to think, because the way that most people act on social media, for example, if you look at people's Facebook feeds or Twitter feeds, there's a lot of talk, especially about politics, and people are not shy about putting their beliefs out there on social media. Why? Because they think it really matters. They think if you vote for this person, we're going to be on the highway to hell, or these terrible things, these dominoes will start to fall. We can't let this happen. So people get out the vote, they spread the word, and they spread their passion because they want society to be better. But some people think, when it comes to our beliefs, our theological truths that we hold on to in the church, maybe some of these can be let go. And Samuel James says maybe the reason why some people think that way is because when it comes to politics, it's easy to see how they apply in the real world, how voting for a certain candidate will lead to a real noticeable impact in your day-to-day life. But with theology, it seems like, is this really practical? Are these teachings really worth fighting over? Can't we all just agree to disagree and maybe, like I said earlier, sit around the campfire and sing Kumbaya? Really? I mean, maybe we should just do that. Is it really, really important that we believe in the inspiration of Scripture? Is it crucial that the church define the doctrine, the dogma of the Immaculate Conception, for example? Here's the thing. This does actually impact our everyday life, even though it doesn't seem like it does, even though it seems like it's just, you know, asking the question, how many angels could dance on the head of a pin, as it were. It actually is a lot more practical than you think. And here's the reason why. Here's the ultimate reason why. And C.S. Lewis, now C.S. Lewis wasn't a Catholic, but he was very Catholic friendly. He had a lot of beliefs that would be, it was right on line with the Catholic Church. He never became Catholic. I think part of it was he was very prejudiced against the Catholic Church because of his upbringing growing up in Belfast. It's hard to overcome some of these prejudices in life, and that could be part of it. I met once a biographer of C.S. Lewis who told me that's why he thought he never became Catholic. But C.S. Lewis made a really important point, and James talked about this in his writing. C.S. Lewis once wrote an essay called Man or Rabbit, which is kind of a cool title, Man or Rabbit. And what was he really asking in that essay? He's asking the question whether a person can really live a good life without being a believer in Jesus Christ. And that's a really good question. A lot of people ask that question to this day. It's kind of a perennial question. Can you be good without God? Can you live a good life without being a Christian? And Lewis even says this in his essay. He says that the very question itself is kind of misleading because it implies that knowing what's really true is separate from having a good life. But that's not the case. Here's a quote from Man or Rabbit by C.S. Lewis. And I'm going to quote C.S. Lewis here. Quote, "One of the things that distinguishes man from the other animals is that he wants to know things. He wants to find out what reality is like, simply for the sake of knowing. When that desire is completely quenched in anyone, I think he has become something less than human. As a matter of fact, I don't believe any of you have really lost that desire. More probably, foolish preachers, by always telling you how much Christianity will help you and how good it is for society, have actually led you to forget that Christianity is not a patent medicine. Christianity claims to give an account of facts to tell you what the real universe is like." Okay, end of quote. I want to just stop there for 1 second because I think that's very, very true, especially in the Protestant world. It's true in the Catholic side too, in some quarters, but it's very common in Protestant preaching and evangelical preaching to focus a lot on the application. Now, it's really important, the application of the faith. How will this help my marriage, for example? Or how will the faith help me be a better friend or get control of my finances or whatever if I just do it in a God-honoring way? All of those things are really practical, yes, and very important. But as C.S. Lewis says, foolish preachers, by always telling you how much Christianity will help you and how good it is for society, have actually led you to forget that Christianity is not a medicine. Christianity claims to give an account of facts to tell you what the real universe is like. Okay, I'm going to go on here. This, again, picking up with C.S. Lewis here. Quote, "Its account of the universe may be true or it may not. And once the question is really before you, then your natural inquisitiveness must make you want to know the answer. If Christianity is untrue, then no honest man will want to believe it, however helpful it might be. If it is true, every honest man will want to believe it, even if it gives him no help at all." End of quote. That is bang on That is absolutely bang on by C.S. Lewis. It's not so much about what this can do for you, practically speaking. The real question is it true? Is the faith true? Is what we believe about Jesus Christ true? And as he says, if it's not true, then no honest person would want to believe it, even if it's helpful to their life. But if it is true, every honest person will want to believe it, even if it's not helpful at all. And it turns out it is helpful, obviously. But what C.S. Lewis is really saying here is that inquiring minds really do want to know. This is why we Google things constantly. This is why we search for knowledge. We have a thirst for knowledge. We want to know. And maybe it's something as mundane or as silly as what the Kardashians are up to, but people do want to know stuff. And hopefully what you're seeking to know is a little bit more sublime than that. And certainly when it comes to the faith, we should be curious about the faith. We should be concerned about Catholic teachings, even if it seems impractical to people outside. And the simple fact is because this is reality, as C.S. Lewis says. This is reality. This is the way the universe really is. This is who God is. This is what God is all about. This is what he's like. And he's revealed his truth to the world. So we should just say, well, thanks for revealing this stuff, but I'm not interested. No, we should actually want to know what he has said, because there's something in the human mind and human heart that wants to know the truth. It doesn't mean that we're ever going to achieve this in this life. In fact, it's not possible. But we got to pursue it. We absolutely have to pursue it. So I don't know what you think of this, but I really want to know from you the answers to these two questions that I asked you. What teachings of the faith do you think people do want to get rid of or maybe don't care about so much, and why? And also, what are some ways that, talking about decluttering, what are some ways that people can declutter their spiritual life this Lent? Got to take a quick break right now. I got to step away just for a second on the Cale Clark Show, but we'll be right back. 888-914-9149. That's the number, 888-914-9149.
Helping you keep your mind off traffic and on the more important things in life. It's Cale Clark on Relevant Radio.
Hey, welcome back to the program. 888-914-9149 is the number to call to talk to me for free. On our studio line, 888-914-9149. We were talking about Marie Kondo and trying to maybe ham-handedly, if you will, apply this to the spiritual life, this idea of decluttering. And I asked you, how are you going to declutter your spiritual life this Lent? Or what are some ways that people can do that? And also, what are some beliefs of the faith that people want to try to get rid of, they want to throw out in order to, in maybe a misguided way, make the faith more palatable to outsiders? Let me know, 888-914-9149. I'm going to go now to Damon in Daly City, California. Hi, Damon.
Hey, Cale. And I'll preface my question with, the Holy Face of Montepello, it's the feast day, February 21st, Tuesday, and then Wednesday is Ash Wednesday. So, mm-hmm. So with that, let me, my question in comment, Cale, is John 6 gives a very Catholic universal way of clutter. Peter and the apostles congregate amongst the 5,000s, and Peter... Perhaps Marie Kondo would like what Peter says. Guys, we got to clean up, get rid of them. And Christ must have looked at the 12, and perhaps one or two saw a glimpse of the Holy Face. And they said, hey, we can't clean up. We got to work with the clutter. And Christ says, find out what the clutter's got. And Cale, can you hear what I'm saying?
I'm not sure I understand what you mean. What is the clutter in this passage? What do you think it is?
The clutter is people. In today's terminology, Peter would say, hey, these are all dogs. Let's keep those 10 over there. They're aristocrats. Let's keep a couple of and get rid of we can't do it. We cannot help everyone. And Christ's face must have said, hey, collect what they got. And they just have pennies of bread. And Christ says, works with the clutter. Don't cast them off. Don't clean up. Work with them. Turn the clutter of humanity into a Thanksgiving feast. the Holy Face, if you can glimpse at it, there's a Holy Face in all this clutter.
Damon, thanks for calling in. Appreciate you listening and calling in. That's an interesting take. Not sure about that one, but that was definitely an interesting take for sure. And let's go now to Kashmir. Kashmir is calling from Nigeria. Hi, Kashmir.
Yeah, hi. I'm online, and the way I think from my perspective as a Catholic faithful and from my family background, as an Immaculate, an ex-seminarian, is that we should, within this period of Lent, meditate on our Catholic traditions, which we have in the life of saints, daily readings, and like I do go on online on a Catholic meditative prayer website where they do daily readings and as well daily sermon, and they equally give us the saint of the day. And those saint of the day, some of them are not really in ordinary time. They are not all that the kind of sense we do have that like Saint Kashmir, the way they said it, is not, you know, very serious sense.
Kashmir, I want to thank you for calling in from Nigeria. That's incredible, the reach of Relevant Radio. And he was given some examples of things we could do this Lent to kind of declutter our lives, maybe focus on the lives of the saints. Forget about our lives. Let's read about their lives and try to imitate them and be more like them. And there are obviously, as you mentioned, lots of great resources online. We have a lot of them on our website, too, at relevantradio.com, on our Relevant Radio app. There's some helpful prayers and a lot of great resources there, so please do check that out. And maybe Kashmir was listening as we're streaming live on relevantradio.com. It's a great way to reach the world for Christ, and that's what we always want to do here at Relevant Radio. We have, of course, about 200 terrestrial radio stations, the old-fashioned way in America, but around the world, we really do depend on the app, we depend on our website and podcasts we put out to reach everybody else. And who knows, we may have stations all over the globe, actual radio towers one day. One never knows. But we're not going to stop with our mission of trying to reach the world for Christ. It's the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio, 888-914-9149. And before the break, I was talking a little bit about how some people want to get rid of aspects of the faith or teachings of the faith that they maybe don't agree with or they think are unpalatable. A lot of that usually has to do with the moral teachings of the church, let's face it. Most people don't not want to become Catholic or leave the church because, I just cannot believe in the hypostatic union of Christ, his human nature, his divine nature, of course. I just can't buy into that. Or I can't possibly believe in the Trinity. Forget it. That's usually not the reason. Usually the reason is to do with morals. But sometimes, especially when it comes to separated brethren, those Christians who are not Catholic, some of those finer points of doctrine do come into play, especially when it comes to things like the Eucharist. And one of my favorite writers historically in that regard, and if you've never read anything by this guy, I highly encourage, maybe this is something you could do for Lent. If you really want to read a cool book, there's this book that was written by this guy named Ronald Knox, who became Monsignor Ronald Knox. And he lived in the late 19th, early 20th century. He was born in 1888. He died in 1957. But he wrote this incredible book in 1927 called The Belief of Catholics. And it's still just as fresh today as it ever was when it was written. A lot of cool things happened in 1927. There was, of course, the 27 Yankees were dominant, but this is a dominant work of Catholic apologetics, The Belief of Catholics. And you can get it. It's published by Ignatius Press. Now, he was a convert to Catholicism from the Anglican Communion. And in that sense, he really did follow Cardinal John Henry Newman, St. John Henry Newman. And he was actually, Monsignor Ronald Knox was actually the son of the Anglican Bishop of Manchester, England. So his career path was pretty much laid out for him, the family business, if you will, from the start.
So he was almost predestined to become an Anglican prelate in his own right. But when he was in school in the early 1900s, he really started this love affair with the Catholic Church. He began to be very attracted to it, but he was still obviously pretty locked into the Anglican communion. And for a lot of years, he actually harbored the hope that somehow the Church of England would one day be reunited with Rome. But he actually got himself ordained. He actually left and became a Catholic. 2 years after that, he was ordained as a Catholic priest. And this is what he said when he was received into the Catholic Church. He said this, quote, "I have been overwhelmed with the feeling of liberty, the glorious liberty of the sons of God. It is a freedom from the uncertainty of mind. It was not until I became a Catholic that I became conscious of my former homelessness, my exile from the place that was my own," end of quote. And like all great, so he just had this freedom. He thought the Catholic faith was freedom. He could finally breathe again. And like a lot of great preachers and teachers, he had a real gift for taking really complex issues and breaking it down into bite-sized, understandable language. And he was also incredibly funny as well. And when you read his writing, his sense of humor really comes apart. And in this book, The Belief of Catholics, which I talked about just a moment ago, he talked about how people were skeptical about the claims of Christianity. And he also took on a lot of arguments made against the Catholic Church by Protestants of various stripes. A lot of those arguments, by the way, are still common today. And I'm just going to give you one of them. I highly recommend reading this book, but here's just one argument that he made in the book. It's the faulty claim that a Christian is not dependent upon the Catholic Church for right teaching. But all the believer in Jesus Christ really needs is the Bible. I don't know if you ever heard this before, but it's absolutely not true. And here's what he says in a chapter of this book, The Belief of Catholics. The chapter is called Where Protestantism Goes Wrong. And so he talks about here how the way that you view the church will either make or break your view of Jesus Christ, the Bible itself, and authority. So here's a quote from The Belief of Catholics, Monsignor Ronald Knox. He says, quote, "A proper notion of the church is a necessary stage before we argue from the authority of Christ to any other theological doctrine, whatever. The infallibility of the church is for us the true induction from which all our theological conclusions are derived." So just going to stop here for 1 second. This might seem a bit, just hang with me here. Just try to listen closely and I'll explain what he's saying here in just a second. But he says the infallibility of the church is for us the true induction from which all our theological conclusions are derived. If you're on the line, we got to take another quick break, but please stay on the line, okay? I'll try to get you right after the break. Hang on, okay? If you want to call in, 888-914-9149's Cale Clark Show, only here on Relevant Radio.
This is the Cale Clark Show, giving you the confidence you need to bring the faith into everyday life.
Hey, I apologize. We had some technical difficulties before the break there. I had to go to break early. We're breaking up. So I'm not 100% sure when you guys lost me, but I'll try to reconstruct what I was talking about before the break. I was talking about Monsignor Ronald Knox, and this is part of the whole discussion of how people want to throw out doctrines of the Catholic Church that they find unpalatable, that they don't think are necessarily important to the whole package. And Catholic convert Monsignor Ronald Knox, was just brilliant, kind of in the tradition of John Henry Newman. He was an Oxford scholar as well, like Newman. He was an Anglican priest. He became a Catholic priest after leaving the Anglican communion, became a Catholic, and he wrote just a masterwork of apologetics called The Belief of Catholics in the year 1927. It's just as fresh in 2023 as it ever was. You should check it out. Maybe this Lent be a good read. And so I was giving a quote from Monsignor Ronald Knox where he said, quote, "A proper notion of the church is a necessary stage before we argue from the authority of Christ to any other theological doctrine whatsoever. So he goes on to say this. He says, quote, "We derive from our apprehension of the living Christ the apprehension of a living church. And it is from that living church that we take our guidance," end of quote. So essentially, we do know that Jesus said, "I will build my church." It was his idea. He started it. He said, "I will build my church and the gates of hell will not overcome it." And he said that, of course, in Matthew 16. So we can get a couple things from that statement of Jesus. Number one, the church that he founded has to go back to Jesus. And number two, it has to still exist today. And the Catholic Church certainly fits the bill on both counts. And he says, "We derive from our apprehension of Christ the apprehension of a church, and it's from that living church that we take our guidance." He goes on to say, "Protestantism claims to take its guidance immediately from the living Christ. But what is the guidance he gives us, and where are we to find it?" End of quote. So a lot of people will say, "Well, I get my guidance from the Bible. That's where I get it." And the claim of a lot of Christians that the Bible guides them alone and provides the final say in matters of faith, it's inconsistent, and it actually can't hold up under reason. So here's what Ronald Knox says about this. He says, quote, he says, "In fact, the Protestant had no conceivable right to base any arguments on the inspiration of the Bible. For the inspiration of the Bible was a doctrine which had been believed before the Protestant Reformation on the mere authority of the church. It rested on exactly the same basis as the doctrine of transubstantiation. Protestantism repudiated transubstantiation, and in doing so, repudiated the authority of the church, and then, without a shred of logic, calmly went on believing in the inspiration of the Bible as if nothing had happened. Did they suppose that biblical inspiration was a self-evident fact, like the axioms of Euclid?" End of quote. So what Ronald Knox is saying here is that not only does the Bible itself not teach that it's the final and sole authority in the Christian life, this actually ignores all the historical facts as to how we receive the Bible and by what authority the canon of Scripture has been set. So the Catholic faith really demands all or nothing. If somebody accepts the authority of Scripture, it's logical that, like Ronald Knox, they've got to accept the authority of the Catholic Church. It's necessary and it's consistent. So this is why the cafeteria methodology doesn't work. People can't say, "Well, I believe this. I love the teaching on the Eucharist, but I don't like the teaching on morality," because it rests on the exact same foundation, which is the authority of the Catholic Church. The Catholic Church decided which books were going to be included in the New Testament canon. These 27 books are Scripture. These other books, as valuable as they might be, are not. And for the church herself to make that call, the church has to be infallible. For the church to say, "These books are infallible Scripture, these other ones are not," the church has to be infallible. It's pure logic, because an effect can't be greater than its cause. And that's true for all church teachings. And Ronald Knox was given to see that. And I think it's important, an important reason why we have to keep all these doctrines of the church on faith and morality. You got to hold them all. You can't, it's all based on the authority of the church. Great stuff from Ronald Knox. So I highly recommend you check out that book, The Belief of Catholics. Well, coming back from the weekend, it's now Monday. You know what I was doing last night? I was checking out the NBA All-Star game. And usually it's not the most exciting All-Star game that there is, although, and this weekend was kind of unexpected, because the dunk contest on Saturday night, it was kind of revived by Mac McClung and winning the tournament and you know, just kind of resurrecting the dunk contest, which I did not think was going to happen, because it hasn't had any star participants in quite a while. But man, he electrified the crowd in Utah, and Dame Dollar, Dame Time, Damian Lillard won the three-point shootout. And then the game itself was not as exciting as I hoped it would be at the end, but usually it's watching the NBA All-Star game is a little bit like watching a video game. All kinds of crazy half-court shots. We saw a lot of that last night. Dunks, no defense usually. But a few years ago, back in 2020, that changed a little bit. And the ending of All-Star games became a lot more exciting because of something called the Elam ending. We've got a clip of the All-Star game from last night. Check this out.
And Giannis will dunk it down, and that's how positionless basketball. Nice feed, and the hometown kid, Lauri Markkanen. Jokic with the offensive board. James, okay!
All right, well, just a couple of days ago on ESPN.com, Tim Bontemps, a great writer, talked about this new ending, and I wish they would incorporate this in every NBA game. I don't think it's going to happen, but I wish that it would. It's called the Elam ending. Now, the NBA doesn't call it the Elam ending, and we'll tell you why in just a second. But it all started with this guy named Nick Elam, who is a math teacher. And in 2020, at the NBA All-Star Game in Chicago at the United Center, it's the first time they used, well, I'm going to call it the Elam ending, even though they don't call it that, in an All-Star game. And at that game, at the 2020 NBA All-Star game, Nick Elam was sitting there with a guy named John Mugar. And John Mugar is really in charge of something called TBT, the basketball tournament. I don't know if you've heard of this, but it's played in the summertime. It started in 2014. It's a 64-team tournament, single elimination, kind of like March Madness. And it's made up of teams of ex-NBA players, some college players, some NBA prospects. Sometimes they're sort of united in a cause, like for some sort of a charity or something like that. But anyways, it's become pretty popular over the years. So John Mugar, who started the basketball tournament, Nick Elam, were sitting together in the United Center at the 2020 NBA All-Star Game. And they just couldn't believe what they were seeing because their dream had become reality. And the players loved it because they had implemented the Elam ending. So in the fourth quarter, here's what they do. They basically, they don't play with a timed quarter, okay, like a 12-minute quarter. They just try to get to a score. So what they decided to do was, whichever team was winning at the end of the third quarter, let's say they've got 100 points, for example. If the winning team at that point has 100 points, it's whatever that score is plus 24 points, and that is the target score that you've got to get to win the game. So if the team that's up is up 100 to, say, 90, you got to get to 124 points to win the game. So it's the winning score plus 24. So the other team, you know, the losing team still has a chance to get back in it, But what's great about it is that it gets rid of things that for example, my dad hates watching pro basketball, especially maybe college basketball, not so much, but this idea that there's a lot of fouling to stop the clock and just, you know, stoppages in play. It just takes forever sometimes to play the last 2 minutes of a basketball game. And this is exactly why Nick Elam created this new kind of ending. So he was just a college hoops fan from Southeast Ohio. And he got this idea when he was watching the 2004 NCAA March Madness tournament. He was watching an Elite Eight game between Xavier and Duke. And at this point, Xavier was the seventh seed. They kind of made a Cinderella run to get to the regional final. They're playing against the number one seeded Duke Blue Devils. And Duke, their largest lead of the game was only 6 points. And with 24 seconds to go, the final moments of the game were just took forever to play. All these intentional fouls, stoppages in play. And Nick Elam said, here's this great game, intense, competitive, athletic, and you get to the final minute or two, and then just all the life goes out of the arena. So my buddies and I were looking at each other, and he said, it's just so weird that the game changes so much at the end. It becomes kind of a warped style of play. And that's when we started throwing around this idea. And it would be something that I would think about every now and then, end of quote. And he kept thinking about it in the back of his mind. And then in 2007, he was watching an ACC tournament game between North Carolina State and Virginia Tech that the light bulb finally went off and the idea struck him. And his concept kind of evolved over time. He was a math teacher, and now he's moved on from teaching high school. He teaches at Ball State now. And he called it at first the hybrid duration format. Well, that's something that, as Tim Bontemps said, only a math teacher could come up with that title. And he kept fiddling with it, and he's came up with this formula that would see the game clock shut off when it hits the three-minute mark. And then just take the winning team score, add 7 points to the total, and that's the number you got to get to. Well, they obviously modified that a little bit. But he had this great idea, and he needed somebody to believe in him. So he emailed John Mugar, who's in charge of the basketball tournament, And John Mugar was on vacation. He was kind of chilling out, and he's just opening a mail, an email from the general mailbox of the basketball tournament's website. And inside, he found this message from Nick Elam, and it was a PowerPoint presentation. It was called Time's Up for Basketball's Game Clock. This thing was 67 pages long, this PowerPoint presentation that was emailed to John Mugar. He's like, 67 pages, what is going on here? But he started reading it, and he couldn't stop reading it. He just absolutely loved it. He's like, wow. And as a guy who puts on the basketball tournament, he said, I'm putting on an event. I'm worried about the entertainment value that I'm serving up to fans. And I became really self-conscious of the end of games where they're in that 4 to 12 point spread. And then it just becomes a march to the free throw line, painful to experience. And so he suggested changing the name from hybrid duration format to the Elam ending. And of course, Nick Elam said, oh, that's a great name. Call it after me. Name it after me. That's awesome. So they started using it at the basketball tournament, which was covered by ESPN. And the next year in Philadelphia, the next summer, it came into use, and it was a huge hit, huge hit. And then they started using it in all of their games the following year in 2018. And a lot of other leagues have picked this up. The Canadian Elite Basketball League started using it in 2020 for all its games. And how it got into the NBA All-Star Game was that Chris Paul, you might have heard of Chris Paul. He's a famous player, plays for the Phoenix Suns. His brother, CJ Paul, emailed the commissioner of the NBA, Adam Silver, and said, you really got to check this out. And he sent him some game tape of the Elam ending in one of the TBT games. And Adam Silver thought it was really interesting. And so they started using it in the 2020 All-Star Game in Chicago. And it was great. And if you've seen it in use over the last couple of All-Star games, it's usually been very, very competitive, which never happens in an All-Star game. Down the stretch, it really does become a great thing. And so they use it now in the G League, the developmental G League, for overtime. I think that would be a good thing to maybe add to the NBA for the regular season. I can see people not wanting to mess with tradition, especially for the playoffs. But I think, hey, maybe they should start looking into it, especially for regular season overtime games. Kind of cool. So I love it. I think it's great. I don't know if you guys are into it or not, but that's the history of the Elam ending at the NBA All-Star Game. Well, believe it or not, we have reached the Elam ending of the Cale Clark Show for today. We've only got a couple of minutes left. 888-914-9149. If you want to squeeze in a phone call, we can try to get you. And let me just pull up my computer screen here. I will tell you, and Patrick Alog says, I love the Elam ending. So do I. I think it's amazing. I think it's game-changing. As Nick Elam said in the article, hey, if this was the way basketball was before, if the Elam ending was the original way to play basketball as designed by James Naismith, and then somebody decided, nah, we should change it to a timed clock where you can foul and stop the clock, nobody would actually want to do that. So I know tradition dies hard, but maybe they should think about that. Well, one tradition that we hope never goes away is Lenten Lessons on the Mass with Father Rocky. This is really important because what? Lent begins in just 2 days. I cannot believe it. And I don't know what your plans are for Lent. I don't know how you want to do a little spring cleaning maybe for Lent in your spiritual life, a little Marie Kondo-esque getting rid of things that don't spark joy in your spiritual life, maybe simplifying a little bit. I am all for that. I'm all for simplifying the spiritual life. But one of the best things you can do is sign up for Father Rocky's Lenten Lessons on the Mass. It's really easy. It's totally free. All you have to do is go to relevantradio.com/Lent. That's all you got to do. relevantradio.com/Lent. And you can sign up. Over 1 million views last year for these short little videos, and they will be sent right to your inbox. You don't have to even think about it. It'll be there when you check your email in the morning. They're packed with interesting facts that will help you learn more about the Mass and your faith. If you want to learn more about your faith too, another thing you can do is go to the Faith Explained page on relevantradio.com. Just go to our shows, The Faith Explained. You can catch all the great scripture studies that we've done over the years. And I'm doing one right now on the book of Exodus. And tomorrow, I'm going to take you inside the tabernacle. This is really amazing because God gives Moses the blueprint for his heavenly throne room, his heavenly sanctuary, and says, you got to make a copy of this on earth. It's called the tabernacle. And one day, when you get to Jerusalem, it'll be the temple. But if you want to check that out, the Ark of the Covenant, Raiders of the Lost Ark, all that stuff, join me tomorrow at 12:30 Central on The Faith Explained, or check the podcast. Stay tuned to Relevant Radio. Keep it locked in. Tim Reese up next, followed by Father Rocky and the Family Rosary. Jim Schaefer produced. Patrick Aloff took your calls. Take it away, Michaela.
Thank you for listening to my daddy.